poems were used to create questions on the Pearson Standardized Test, questions she does not even know the answers to. Wait till you hear from Sarah, blogger, rebel teacher, trending news, Matt Damon's mom, moment of zen, and more.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker.
Let's bust some pencils.
Here's what's trending in education news.
Pedal desks are all the rage. That's right, from WDRB.com, Owensboro, Kentucky. Quote, remember those classrooms with desks? You know, the ones like in A Christmas Story, all lined up in rows? That's so 20th century. End quote. Yeah, in Kentucky. In fact, if you Google, you'll see it's happening all over the country. But in Kentucky, a kindergarten teacher won $12,000. And with that $12,000, she replaced those old style desks with newfangled pedal desks. What's a pedal desk? Just what it sounds like. An overpriced desk with a set of pedals attached to it to allow kids to, quote, pedal and learn. Hell, in one middle school in North Carolina, according to TheInsider.com, pedal desks have even increased the math scores of middle schoolers. Don't think I'm serious? Think this is a joke? I wish. Hey, in the name of academic achievement, we are now spending thousands of dollars for pedal bikes. Why? Well, in Kentucky and North Carolina, those damn kids were just too fidgety. Something had to be done. Kids were jiggling, poking, and throwing. It was chaos. Again, something had to be done. And then something was done indeed. Way too much money was spent on a bullshit program. You can't make kids sit still for hours on end. It's not natural. Really, it's a form of child abuse. Which begs two questions. Are these people insane? And what the hell happened to recess and playgrounds? You see, recess would have cost nothing, not a zilch. Kids could have fidgeted, run, spit, yell, twist, do all the things they do for the simple cost of nothing out on a playground. It's called recess. It happens outside the school, it's been used for years, and it's proven. So Kentucky and North Carolina, listen up. Stop being stupid. If kids are fidgety, they're telling you something. They either have to pee really bad, or they're ready for a freaking break from the monotony that school has become in the pursuit of academic achievement. Wonder what those math scores would have been like if we had just let those kids be kids during the day and simply have time to play. I'll end it with this quote from ScaryMom.com. They're restless for a reason. They're not being given enough unstructured time at school to run around and burn off energy. We don't need to be looking for solutions for restless kids. We need to let them out of the classroom again. So let me end with this. No pedal desks. Let's try some old-fashioned recess and playgrounds. And that's your news with attitude. I wonder what Matt Damon's mom thinks about kids pedaling to nowhere.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
Okay, now we're getting into science fiction. Did you see the movie WALL-E? Because this would have been a really good, like, classroom aspect of the movie. You know, these little fat people riding around in cars and looking at screens. It would be like in school. They go to school and they'd sit at a desk and pedal. Getting real about this, the idea that a kindergarten teacher would have, you know, tried to write a proposal to get pedal desks so that kindergartners could tolerate more easily sitting still at desks is a frightening idea. And the fact that people take it seriously to me is absurd but also scary, because we've seen changes in kindergarten, and this has shown up in a number of major studies, since No Child Left Behind and the ed reform era we're in of the last 15, 16 years, where the trends in kindergarten and early childhood classrooms are deeply worrisome to anybody who cares about how young children learn or knows how young children learn, because kindergarten classrooms used to have activity centers and a lot of child choice. It's disappeared to a great extent in the majority of kindergartens. There are many more worksheets, much more teacher-led instruction, much more sitting still, very little play or no play, very little recess or no recess. And the ways that we understand young children learn, which is through play and play-based experiences and hands-on manipulative materials and interactive experiences and social experiences, all of these things are disappearing and being replaced by all of this teacher-led, drill-based, right and wrong answer, passive kind of learning. And it's the worst, you probably know, in low-income communities, primarily communities of color. So you know, our youngest kids are getting turned off to school, and the kids getting most turned off to school are the kids from poor communities and black and brown children. It's alarming. Look, it's alarming what's happening in early childhood. And it's scary because people take it seriously and then write an article about how great it was that the teacher wrote a grant to get the pedal desk, $12,000 grant from a school system to install her pedal desk, and everybody's taking it seriously. Something
right.
Really wrong.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Welcome to the show, Sarah Holbrook. Sarah, you're a poet.
Guilty.
Not only are you a poet, but you were fortunate enough to have two of your poems selected by a huge testing giant to appear on a Texas high-stakes standardized exam. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. They appeared in 2013 and 2014.
Is that the epitome of making it as a poet, then, when your poems show up on a standardized test?
Well, I wish someone would have called me and told me at the time. I don't know.
When you found out about this, from what I understand, you got to then see the test questions associated with your poems. And after you read through the questions, you, the poet, were not able to answer those questions.
Right. They're written purposefully vague.
The testing giant understands Sarah Holbrook's poetry better than you, Sarah Holbrook, the poet.
Yeah, I think this goes into a place where we have really jumped the shark in literary analysis. And because anytime we go from this passage works for me because it makes me see this, or this simile works for me because it leads me here, to the author's intent was to dot, dot, dot.
Well, and that's
we
it.
We don't know.
Right? We don't know this author's intent. You took this to HuffPost, where you put in a post that just recently appeared, "I can't answer these Texas standardized test questions about my own poems." How did the poems, though, end up on the Texas standardized exam?
I went back to my publisher, which is Boyd's Mills Press, owned by Highlight, and they looked into their records. 2011, they sold the poems for $350 a piece to Pearson. I got $175. We split that 50-50, and it came to me on my royalty statement just as outside sales, which is an aggregate amount. It also means sales to anthologies, that sort of thing. So I really had no idea. Until a teacher called me in the spring of 2016 to hire my partner, Michael Salinger, and I to come to Texas to try to explain these questions to her kids.
Is that the first time where you got to actually see, wait a minute, these are questions I would have never have written?
Right, exactly. And the thing, they go to the author's intent, and how could anybody know my intent without asking me? I mean, it's kind of a silly thing. Plus, the way the questions are written, they're written so that more than one answer is right, and the kid must choose the most right one. Now, as adults, we can kind of tease this out, right? But these kids are 12. They can't decide whether or not to wear a coat when it's snowing, you know? It's crazy.
I want to jump in to the poem right away.
All right.
You had two, but this is one, and it's called A Real Case, and this is by Sarah Holbrook. So I just want to go through this because, first of all, I think the poem's awesome. Doubt, A Real Case by Sarah Holbrook. Doubtful. I have a fever or any other measurable symptom. I'm just down with a sniffly case of sudden self-loathing syndrome. Today, it hit like a thwop of mashed potatoes snapped against a plate, an unrequested extra serving of just for now self-hate. Today, I'm worthless, a leftover bath, a wad of secondhand gum. I belong in a twist-tied bag with the rest of the toys that won't run. My mood's as welcome as incoming dog breath or a terminal case of split ends. I sparkle like a dust rag. I could attract mosquitoes, maybe, not friends. In fact, I could be contagious. I'm a downer, to say the least. And if you try to push my mood swing, I'll only drag my feet. Why? I just couldn't tell you. Just some days I get up and get down. It's not a permanent disability, though. Tomorrow, I'll come around. Cool stuff. I mean, the poem's awesome. Instantly, I think dog breath, because
right.
I have two of those dogs that greet me every day, and I know that smell.
So, you do.
So when you talk about
that. So you made it a text to self-connection.
I made it to say, okay, right. Now, on to the test. First question. Which lines from the poem best suggest that the speaker's situation is temporary? F,
right.
Doubtful, I have a fever. G, tomorrow I'll come around. H, today it hit like a thwop of mashed potatoes. J, I could attract mosquitoes, maybe not friends. Now those are the choices, and that's the question from the poem. Which line from that poem best suggests the speaker's, that means you, the poet's, situation is just temporary? And here's where you, in your post, I want to just quote this and then we'll talk about it. You say, I'm guessing G, but I could make a pretty good argument for H as, well, it's all caps and that belongs to today. However, right. You mustn't overthink this because the clock's ticking. Okay, let's go with G.
Right. I'm just kind of going through my mind. I'm pretending I'm a 12-year-old going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. You know, because you're watching the clock. You can't ask anybody.
Well,
right.
I'm thinking about it as almost 50 here in a few days, year old, looking at the poem and enjoying the poem, as I said, the dog breath and the fun that comes with it. And I'm sorry, but even me, when I look at those questions and, you know, what is the most likely reason that the poet uses capitalization? And there again, you know, to quote A, highlight the problem a speaker experiences, to stress the speaker's expectations for tomorrow, to indicate that the speaker's condition happens unexpectedly, D, to show the speaker's excitement about an upcoming event. And again, here you go. Well, could be A, all caps is a hot, you know, is a highlight, is a fact, right? You know, all these possibilities. And I love how you go through this. So again, for the listener, check out Huffington Post.
I loved hearing you read the poem because when you saw the all caps, you mm-hmm. said today,
right?
And that's why I did it. I write my poems to be read aloud.
Oh, and right? You know what? That answer is not one of the answers. Now, how am I
loved that you did that.
It's great. I mean, the poem is great. You're a wonderful writer. There is an honor to have some of your stuff chosen like that to be put in a test. But what happens, and you talk about this, of how the tests and the results are going to end up being used with teachers, with students, with school districts, and the fact that these answers to these, your intentions of a poem you wrote in, obviously, at some point of the day.
Right. A bad day.
Bad day.
You know, we all have them.
How does it feel to know that that your poems are going to be used to show that students, teachers, and schools are failing?
Yeah, I hate that. I can't even tell you how much I hate that because, first of all, I think it's ludicrous to use the same test to evaluate the teacher as evaluate the child. Say that teacher has brought this seventh grade student from reading at a third grade level to a sixth grade level in 1 year, a quantum leap.
Right.
But they still fall short on this guessing game. And the teacher, depending on what state she lives in, this is not just a Texas problem. My daughter teaches in Virginia. 40% of her evaluation is based on her kids' ability to succeed on these guessing games. And they are guessing games. They are not scientific. That's nuts.
40% mm-hmm. of her evaluation is based on the kids' test scores?
Right, in Virginia.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people understand. I mean, they've heard about tests being factored in as part of the evaluation, but 40%, and mm-hmm. then you just add in what we did with your questions, which is the intent of the author.
And some of them are even more ludicrous. That one was kind of obvious, but if you skip down to question 36, where it says the poet reveals the speaker's feelings mainly by using similes and metaphors to describe them. Certainly I did that.
Sure.
Explaining their effect on others. Well, yeah. If I smell like dog breath, I'm going to have an effect on others, right? And chase them away. Connecting them to memories. It obviously connected to your memory. You know what dog breath smells like.
Yes, I do.
And repeating specific words for emphasis. I repeated the word today over and over. So I see these things kind of swimming around in the page, and I wonder, where is the all of the above?
And those are all true. Now, as I'm supposed to, and as an adult, I can kind of go through this and really try to extract which one is the most right. But these are 12-year-old kids.
Yeah.
And what does that evidence about their reading ability, about their teacher's mastery of teaching literature? Nothing. They've never seen this poem before. They've never discussed it.
Why aren't more poets and people whose passages that are being used in these tests, why aren't they speaking out like you?
Well, first of all, a lot of them don't know. There's that line. So they don't know. And secondly, Texas is the only state that I know of, and I'm open for other information here, that posts the past tests online.
Oh.
See, others who are operating on the big Pearson tests that go to many states are under gag orders not to talk about the test. And I had a teacher write to me this morning. She said in the state of Washington, she's not even allowed to look at the test. If a kid who's facing a computer, a first grader, can't understand how to use the computer to answer the most she can say to him or her is do the best you can and hand them tissues when they start to cry.
I want to have more people talk about this issue because we spend so much time, everybody says, why are you worried about a test? Well, you know, let your kids do well or let them fail. And, that, you know, this is a quality way to show results. And here you are, the author of the poem that's being used, saying, I would not have been able to get these test questions correct. What does that say then about a system that is judging our kids, our teachers, and our schools?
It says that it's a bunch of malarkey, I think. And also, we pay big bucks for this. The state of Texas that year in 2013 spent $500 million on these tests.
$500 million?
Million dollars. $500 million, a half billion dollars.
That's a lot of field trips.
Yeah, and it's a lot of smaller class sizes.
They could have gone to like the humane societies and smelled dog breath.
Exactly. That's brilliant.
Like that.
The results could have been predicted by people just by looking at zip codes.
Well, and you put that piece in there, and in fact, it refers to Chris Tankin, and we've actually interviewed Chris Tankin on this show before about his research on the predictability of test scores, so it's interesting. I would encourage listeners out there to go to HuffPost, look at Sarah Holbrook, I Can't Answer These Texas Standardized Test Questions About My Own Poems. Read it, enjoy it, have fun with it, and then express your outrage publicly. Talk to school boards, talk to the paper, let them know this is atrocious, this is a tragedy. And when we talk about $500 million, really? That's the problem.
It's up to parents and artists and community members to speak out. Know that teachers are operating under gag orders, and often they can't, or they'll be fired.
Sarah, do you have a website?
The best one is outspokenlit.com, which I share with my husband, and we do a lot of consulting work, assemblies for kids with fun poetry, and also professional development. So.
Well, Sarah Holbrook, what a great piece. Thank you for bringing it to the attention, and thanks for being on Busted Pencils.
Thank you very much.
Educated educators talking education. Get the latest blogs from Peggy with a Pen, Lily's Pad, and Rebel Teacher now exclusively at BustedPencils.com. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Joining us now to talk about his latest blog at BustedPencils.com, Rebel Teacher. Welcome to the show.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So check it out. Your latest blog on BustedPencils.com, Public Education and the Specter of Fascism. All right. Right away on the title, you're making me go, wait a minute. You're one of these dudes that's thrown that fascist word out and just plain silly with it, right?
You know, there's a lot to it. You know, it doesn't, you know, generally when people think fascism, they jump, you know, automatically to Nazi Germany. But there are some strong parallels, you know, with fascism. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, Nazi Germany. When we see a merger basically between, you know, the corporate sector and the government, you know, and it's accompanied by a strong sense of nationalism and patriotism, a strong sense of restoring traditional values when it comes along with or when it may come along with suppressing social movements. You know, when we look at fascist Italy in the right in the textbook in world history, right, it talks about the indoctrination in the school system and blind loyalty to the state. And, you know, these kind of things, they call it what it is. However, here it's harder to kind of see it for what it is.
So now, just point out, too, you would know this because you're one of those history teachers that teaches this stuff, right?
Yes, sir. I teach this stuff.
Okay. So the textbook description and definition of fascism is something you've taught. You're coming out, though, and making a statement of saying, you know, this election, this past election, particularly with Donald Trump, is ushering in a form of fascism. Is that your claim?
Yes.
Okay.
And on some level, I would say continuing, certain level of soft fascism that we saw with the last administration and the previous administration before that as well.
Okay.
But things are coming together under this administration as they haven't before.
Well, I like how you put that out there, too, is to help people separate, because as soon as you say fascist, the first thing is say, man, don't tell me, you know, we're not doing concentration
right.
camps and stuff. And you're like, no, that's exactly what we're not doing. In fact, that's not really fascism. That's, you know, a truly immoral dictatorship
right.
that went crazy. But
right.
fascism, this idea
right.
of the government in collusion with big business taking advantage of the people, come on,
mm-hmm.
right?
When there's a crisis, when we look at fascist states and we see and there's a crisis in capitalism, and there's fear and there's rumblings from below, this is what we see. We see the corporate class get behind a strong man to defend their own interests. Nazi Germany was fascist before the concentration camps came. That's not what defined it as fascist.
Why do public schools specifically, though, need to fear this coming change?
For a few reasons. This is one of the last bastions of unionized workers. Okay, and we're seeing how the powers that be are trying to shift education to fit the needs of the market. It's shifting from, you know, the ideas of, you know, Dewey and liberal education and all this stuff. It's being geared towards the market. We're also seeing the public school, you know, at least the popular depiction of it is that, you know, there are these, you know, liberal kind of hippie radicals, you know, indoctrinating children, promoting homosexuality and all of this kind of stuff, not educating the children.
So, yeah, I like how you put this in the popular depiction of public education from the right wing is as a cesspool of liberal, quasi-radical, godless teachers indoctrinating children instead of educating them, promoting homosexuality and atheism. Okay, and that's it. Yeah, that's the boogeyman of what public education is in their mind that they're painting. And so if that's true, and they've been really good at convincing people that some form of what you just described is actually functioning out there, then they're here to save everybody from this liberal atheism, homosexuality worshiping group of people.
Exactly. When, you know, what we're trying to push from our perspective, we'd say we're pushing diversity, tolerance, and multiculturalism and critical thinking.
Is public education a solution to this problem?
Public education, as it should be or as it is,
I think
it can be.
Okay, what it can
be. It can definitely be a part of the solution.
Okay.
I think it can definitely be a part of the solution because an educated populace, you know, it's hard to manipulate an educated populace. You know, you have to have, you know, this, and we still have it here, even though we're characterized as such. We still have a lot of, you know, jingoism and indoctrination and the hidden curriculum
right.
in the overall cultures and in the overall culture and in the textbook that is basically, you know, looking to push kids towards a certain worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And I think public education, particularly in social studies, I mean, our job is to bust all that open and really dig up under and find the hidden curriculum, you know, that's not quite so obvious. So I definitely think a functioning public education is definitely a part of the solution.
Let's hope that people recognize the power of public education as the foundation of quote, our democracy, and realize that if we are going in towards, as you say, the specter of fascism, then that we need to really build our public schools and make them what they really should be. be, which are bastions, I'm sorry, of critical thinking, of the ability to understand diversity and inclusive cultures, to understand and how to work with problems, because this push towards worker indoctrination and a dumb population guarantees that fascism will thrive. And so that's where I'm with you. Rebel teachers, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
On our next show, we're going to discuss a new organization, EDGE, Education Deans for Justice and Equity, with Dr. Kathy Schultz, Dean of the School of Education at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Here's a teaser of Dr. Kathy answering the famous Alfie Cohn question, what are the schools our children deserve?
They're schools that see our children and actually know who they are. They're schools that acknowledge that learning takes place inside the school walls and all day long, all week long, and so acknowledge the learning that happens everywhere. And they're schools that make learning as exciting as it is for babies who are learning everything. So they're project-based and follow the students, the children, the young people's interests, and are changing according to the times.
Really looking forward to our discussion with Dr. Kathy Schultz. My thanks to Sarah Holbrook, Rebel Teacher, and of course, Matt Damon's mom. I'm Tim Slecker, and I leave you with our tribute to legendary activist and historian Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
The Founding Fathers were not a multicultural group. There were no women, no Native Americans, no blacks, and virtually no poor people. Howard Zinn, from Howard Zinn Speaks, Collected Speeches, 1963 to 2009. Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk, Busted Pencils Radio.